Hello, I'm Oliver Colling, and this is my 70s TV childhood. Hello again, and a very warm welcome back to My 70s TV Childhood, which is all about growing up as a child in 1970s Britain, with a special focus on the role of television in our and our families' lives. Like no other time in UK history, before or since, 1970s television was part of the glue which held our society together, and our podcast aims to bring back memories of that unique period. Thanks for all your comments and for the feedback. Hearing from listeners from across the world makes doing this podcast worthwhile, and I'm really humbled by the fact that so many of you are listening, and that my slightly rambling reminiscences strike such a chord with so many of you out there. Remember, if you'd like to make a point yourself or share some of your memories, you can do so on our blog, www.my70stvchildhood.com. Tweet at 70s TV Childhood, or you can email me, oliver@my70stvchildhood.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Now, I don't know about you, but one of the great delights I had as a child watching television was when the schedules didn't quite run to time and the continuity announcer would announce that due to the early finish at the cricket or whatever else was on, we've time for an additional programme, which should almost always be a cartoon. The ones held back for such occasions were often ones from the 1940s and 50s, which had been originally made for the cinema, like Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, or Sylvester and Tweety Pie, all of which I loved. They were often five-minute masterpieces, put together with care and great production values, and the characters, invariably voiced by the great Mel Blanc, were really, really engaging. As well as the great Warner Brothers cartoons, we also used to get a lot of Tom and Jerry, made by MGM Studios. The Tom and Jerry cartoons from the golden age of cinema were brilliant. Great animation, music, and always funny, and sometimes with great sentimentality or pathos. One of my personal favourites was The Night Before Christmas, when, as the poem goes, all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Well, of course, Jerry was stirring and getting into all types of Christmas-related mayhem with Tom. This cartoon was first released the day before the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941, but I loved waiting for it to appear as part of the BBC's Christmas schedules. We don't see so much of Tom and Jerry on TV nowadays, as the violence in them was always controversial, as were some of the depictions of race, but they were of their time, and they always made me laugh. The Tom and Jerry cartoons were produced by Fred Quimby, who collected 7 Oscars for Best Animated Short for Tom and Jerry cartoons. Yes, 7 Oscars won by Tom and Jerry. But Quimby had little to do with making the cartoons himself. No. The two men behind Tom and Jerry were William Hanna and Joseph Barbera, who worked for MGM for 18 years between 1939 and 1957, where, in spite of the success of their cartoon work, they never got the recognition they thought they were due. So eventually, they left and went on their own. For my generation, Hanna-Barbera is synonymous with cartoons. They produced them by the truckload, and the schedules of 1970s children's TV in this country were full of them. A typical afternoon's children's programming on the BBC would include a short cartoon like Touché Turtle, who regular listeners may recall that was the first program I ever watched on our family's first colour TV in 1977. There would also be longer programs like Wacky Races or Scooby-Doo, all of which had the Hanna-Barbera stamp on them. And it wasn't just the BBC. I remember ITV showed the Flintstones, the modern Stone Age family, and the Jetsons, the family of the future. It sometimes seemed like Hanna-Barbera had an endless supply of cartoons, all of which were targeted at the UK schedules. Now don't get me wrong, I loved many of the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, and shows like Scooby-Doo, Wacky Races, and of course its follow-up Stop the Pigeon, were compulsory viewing in my eyes. But the production values in all of them were a million miles away from the delightful artistic skills on show in the classic Tom and Jerry films. So why was that? The 50s, 60s and 70s presented a huge increase in television audiences and, as a result, child viewers. So a diet of fast, loud and funny cartoons was a great way to fill the schedules. Kids loved them. Parents were a little sceptical, and it made Hanna and Barbera into multimillionaires. They even devised a live-action show to package up several cartoons. Again, regular viewers will remember that we discussed the banana splits in our episode Size of an Elephant, where our guest Stuart remembered the show.
It was a big part of Saturday morning entertainment. It seemed to run for years. It was in the pre-swap shop days, if your listeners remember, Swap Shop being the first of the BBC's efforts at a TV programme that filled the whole of the Saturday morning schedules. It was before that, it was more of a series of very disparate programmes, and the banana splits seemed to be a near constant in that. It was probably one of the more anarchic things from my childhood, and having recently given the game away here, having recently re-watched an episode as some research for this talk, my memories are a bit more positive, as I say, than what my most recent experience has been. But it was for the time, it was totally enjoyable. I must have watched it on colour TV because I remember it being very colourful and had a series of it was like a compilation of other programmes wrapped into one. So it was. I guess they were trying to have something for everyone in there, but they packed a lot into 28 minutes or however long each episode lasted.
Yes. So which of the they had cartoons? Which cartoons did you like in it?
The Three Musketeers one is the one that stands out as being the near constant in there. But the Arabian Nights was a series of cartoons about a band of what was probably like an early version of Avengers Assemble. Because they all seemed to have their superpowers, mainly around magic of different sorts, basically fighting against the evil Sultan who had just taken over the local city, which I'm assuming was Baghdad or something like that. But that one stands out because of this, the nature of the characters and how someone could solve every problem that they encountered via this various superpowers that they had. But there was that and the Three Musketeers were classic, I think, Hanna-Barbera cartoons, which seem to fill most of each episode of the Banana Splits.
In one of our recent episodes, I mentioned a cartoon series called CB Bears and described it as another low-grade Hanna-Barbera cartoon. And whilst I didn't mean to denigrate all the works in the Hanna-Barbera canon, I did prompt one of our listeners to get in touch. And I'm delighted to be joined by one of our regular listeners and also a regular correspondent to the programme, Paul from South Wales. Hello, Paul. Welcome to my 70s TV childhood.
Hello, Oliver. Thanks for the nice warm welcome. I've been, like many other people, I've been enjoying your show since it first came out back in the old days of 2020. And I think it strikes a chord with 50-somethings. Do you know, somebody said to me the other day, do you still enjoy sex at 50? And I said, yeah, it was very convenient. I live at number 49.
No, well, thanks ever so much for joining us. And thanks for your kind words there. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little place called Neath in South Wales, not far from Swansea. Abertawe, as Welsh call it. It's I lived in one of those new built council houses, which I thought was very posh, and it had a bathroom and a toilet separate in those days. So, but it didn't have a sink in. It didn't have a sink in the room with a toilet, which I don't think would be seen as very hygienic now. But at the time, we thought it was a nice little house. And then in 1977, because of tax reasons, my parents moved to Merthyr Tynfil, just down the road, about 25 miles down the road. So, Valley is always a good place to grow up. Friendly communities. I suppose we're the last generation that went outside to play, and we saw things like coal tips and ash tips as a bit of fun, really. We'd slide down them and look at the weird stones and the old bottles of the pop factories and things. And of course, home in time for the telly then.
Yeah, well, that's good, because I think wherever you grow up, whenever you grow up, childhood is about doing that kind of thing, isn't it? It's about enjoying life and making the most of it, playing with your friends, and so on.
It is.
So you mentioned television. What part did television play in your childhood?
Well, very big part, really, as television was kind of huge in a literal sense and in a metaphorical sense, because the sets were so huge in those days, with a big one right in the centre of the room. And from when I was very, very young, I can remember watching the children's programmes, things like Finger Bobs, the colourised Andy Pandy, and it was a bit wet for me, to be honest, even at that age. And then moving on to Bagpuss and lots of cartoons, coming home from school very young, watching Scooby-Doo and some of the ITV ones as well, which are a bit neglected and would be, I think, perhaps an idea for a show. Things like Jamie and the Magic Torch, Shorten and the Wheelies, and of course the adult programmes as well. Doctor Who was one of my first loves. Top of the Pops, and I'm a big music fan. One of my first crushes were Pam's People and Lengs and Co. The person who scared me the most in those days when I was about 3 or 4 was Russell Mael of Sparks with a Hitler moustache.
Oh, yes.
All at the camera. They used to run out of the room when he came in. Nowadays, I like his music.
I've seen him reasonably recently. He's still quite scary.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we've got that look.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's that sounds good. I mean, you've been in touch on a number of subjects, and we've exchanged our views on a few things. But one thing in particular is you pulled me up on my reference to the CB Bears recently, and my description is that as being a low-grade Hanna-Barbera cartoon. And it wasn't meant as any kind of disrespect, but I suppose what it was there were so many of those Hanna-Barbera cartoons on, and I used to watch them all, obviously. But some of them were obviously more popular than others. And you mentioned that you're a bit of an expert on these cartoons. So how does one become an expert on Hanna-Barbera, other than by doing what it seems both you and I did, and watch lots of them?
Well, I've read quite a few books, looked at their websites, and it's interesting stuff, really. How they started small, copying the classics. I mean, it's a bit outside our remit, the first ones, because they were copied 50s and 60s, shall we talk about Top Cat. Of course, there's a law to say it was called Boss Cat in our days in this country, isn't it? And the Flintstones based on the Honeymoon, Top Cat based on Bilko. And in fact, all the voices were the same, except for Phil Silvers, who it wasn't enough money for him, apparently, but just what everybody had in the hall as Officer Dibble. But yeah, great little shows. But I'm interested in sort of the more obscure ones as well, like the Funky Phantom, the Spirit of 1776, even, and the ones that try to be spectaculars, and you think we must be getting a really good cartoon here because everybody's in it. Things like Laugh Olympics, to be topical, and there were three teams: the Yogi Ahoo's, the Scooby Doobies, and the Really Rottens. Who were led by Dick Dastardly and Muttley, of course, who I also enjoyed in magnificent men in flying machines and wacky races. Of course, he was quite a popular character.
Yes, yes. I used to love wacky races. Just going back to that, I'm just remembering, thinking about the funky Phantom. That's something I haven't thought about for a long time. And that's right, he was an American revolutionary, wasn't he? Didn't he have a cat as well, I seem to remember?
Yeah, he had a Phantom cat, a gang fairly like Scooby-Doo's gang found him in a haunted house. In fact, there was a song about it, and he jumps out of the clock.
That's right.
At 12 o'clock midnight.
Yes.
Joined them to solve mysteries. That's another good thing Hanna-Barbera was. They saw Scooby-Doo 1969. That's a massive hit. They were going to put in old wine into new bottles. Let's recycle the mystery stuff. So they had a funky Phantom solving mysteries. They had Goober and the Ghost Chasers. Now, Goober was a bit like Scooby-Doo, but think of a camp talking Scooby-Doo voiced by Paul Lynn, who did so many cartoon voices. And
I remember it seemed very, very close. It was far too close to Scooby-Doo for my liking.
Yes.
We even had a dog. And although I seem to remember that they did actually have actual ghosts in Scooby-Doo.
They did, and it wasn't all caused by a grumpy caretaker and millions of pounds in back rejection. And so they did recycle a lot. And there was the slightly irritated Captain Caveman as well, solving crimes.
Yeah, Captain Caveman. It is almost an endless list. I mean, just thinking of some of the ones that I remember. Obviously, things like the Flintstones, Yogi Bear, and so on, they were made, some of them made in the 50s, 60s, but then repeated again and again. But still good.
Yeah.
And I remember one thing that I used to watch, but I wasn't sure. I could never make up my mind whether I liked it or not, was the cartoon version of Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, that was an early one, I like the theme tune and a little bit of business just to their ties, but all in all, I still got a couple of the little books that cost about 10p at the time. But all in all, I think I prefer the originals.
Yes, yes. So which one do you think was your favourite out of those?
I would say Scooby-Doo. I've had a crush on Daphne for many years, and I did enjoy the little bubblegum song in the middle, and they'd sort of delay the ghost. A shave, sir, they pretend to be hairdressers or waiters or something, then a bubblegum song would come on, and it was written by people like Barker and Adams, who wrote the Banana Splits theme. And actually, there's a fact for you, perhaps a less than fascinating fact. The Scooby-Doo theme was written by somebody called Ben Raleigh, or Reilly, as they called him in America, who wrote a song called Tell Laura I Love Her, which was a hit for number one hit for a Welshman, Ricky Valance, back in 1960. So.
Yes. Was it really? I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that. So Tell Laura I Love Her to Scooby-Doo theme tune.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating. That is a very good, very, very good fact. I'm sure our listeners will be happy to know that now. Things like the Laugh Olympics, I'd forgotten. Yes, they brought all these characters together, and I suppose they gave them because now what were the I'm trying to remember the two dogs. Was it Augie Doggy and Doggy Daddy?
Yes,
I think they used to appear.
Their auntie. Oh, son of mine!
Son of mine. That's my boy. What do you think that the attraction was of the Hanna-Barbera cartoons? The fact that so many of them are still fondly remembered.
I think it was just slight irreverence, because everybody from Top Cat onwards to the kids in the Mystery Machine, say Josie and the Pussycats, who were fairly feminist for their time, they were all slightly rebellious. There was a hint of danger with all of them. There was lots of silly slapstick that children, I guess, could enjoy. And if you want a dissertation, it'll get you maybe a Desmond from the University of West Anglia or something. I'd say the thing behind, slightly lightheartedly, the thing behind Hanna-Barbera cartoons in the 70s was the Depression. Have a look at some of them, and you see the fool. huge importance of food almost as a sex substitute, I think. Because
yes,
seriously, people were really doing without food back then. And voices as well were based on Depression-era comedians, people like Bert Lahr, the Cowardly Lion, Vernon, and Jimmy Durante. And the women had that sort of 40s, 50s look, even into the 80s with the long hair, and which was quite popular in the 60s, but that carried on into the 80s. So that's my sort of critical theory of Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So it provided that sort of comfort, that that sort of following on from the Depression and so on, given sort of the reassurance that everything was fine, and the reassuring voice and comfort to the viewers.
Yeah, that's an important part of it, I think, because at the end of it, they're saying life is fun, really. There's no such thing as ghosts or monsters. You may be scared, but they don't really exist, and everything will turn out fine in the end.
Oh, well, that's great. That's quite a legacy for Hanna-Barbera to leave.
It is, yeah. Of course, there were some that had morals in, a bit ahead. Sometimes they used to crowbar morals in, but sometimes ahead of their time. There was one called Yogi's Gang, based on Around the World in 80 Days, sort of mid-70s. I remember it now. They visited a city called Smog City, and it was all polluted, and people couldn't breathe. And I thought, well, that's very ahead. Looking back, so ahead of his time, 30 years, really.
It is. It is. Yeah. No, I do. I just now you've mentioned it, I do remember Yogi and his team traveling around the world, a bit like World in 80 Days. But yes, they're putting morals into cartoons. No, I suppose at the time we didn't necessarily notice.
No. No, it was quite cleverly done. Although perhaps we'd be a bit irritated by the really obvious ones, Ataman. A lecture in Yogi about saving for a rainy day and things, but still, it was all well intentioned.
Yes, yeah, it was. No, well, that's absolutely great. Thanks, Paul, for sharing your thoughts on that. Really good to have you. And hope we'll talk again soon.
Yes, yeah, that's joint president of the Wally Gator fan club talking there.
Thanks to Paul for sharing his memories with us. I should be proud to be a joint president of the Wally Gator fan club. I think what it does show is how successful Hanna-Barbera were in capturing that part of the cartoon market and giving us all lots of happy memories, even if we probably wouldn't enjoy any of them quite as much today. Were you a Hanna-Barbera fan? Or did the likes of Scooby-Doo, the Hair Bear Bunch and Penelope Pitstop leave you cold? Perhaps you prefer the British animations that Paul was mentioning, like Jamie and the Magic Torch, or others from the marvellous Cosgrove Hall Productions. Let me know on our blog at www.my70stvchildhood.com, tweet at 70stvchildhood, or email me, oliver@my70stvchildhood.com. That's all from me for now, so join me again soon for more from My 70s TV Childhood.